Imagine your business's core operational platform just drops offline right this very second.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a nightmare scenario for anyone.
Right. I mean, we are talking about the main application you use to serve your clients or your entire communication network. Do you have a clear, documented, tested path to get it back up?
Or are you, just going to make a frantic phone call to an IT contact and
Yeah.
sort of just hope for the best?
Exactly. And for a lot of business leaders, the honest answer is, well, it's that frantic phone call.
Yeah, definitely. I think there is this tendency to view technology as this resilient, invisible infrastructure that just runs in the background.
Yeah.
But in reality, for a lot of organizations, it is held together by temporary fixes and honestly, just sheer luck.
Sheer luck that multiple systems haven't failed at the exact same time. And that transition from relying on luck to building actual resilience, that's the core focus of our deep dive today.
Yeah, and we've got some great material to work with. We are looking at a really practical buyer's checklist for choosing a managed IT provider.
Yep. The source material for this comes from Technisian. They're an IT support firm based in Orange County, California. We're specifically drawing from some insights by Ravi Jain.
And we are also bringing in some foundational cybersecurity guidelines from CISA, which is the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency.
Right. So our mission here is to basically strip away all the vendor jargon. We want to give you, the business leader or operations director, a calm, practical framework to evaluate what you actually need.
To kind of establish a secure, reliable operational rhythm, right?
Yeah, quite.
But before we get into how to evaluate a provider, we really have to look at the foundational architecture of how you buy IT support in the first place.
Which for most businesses starts with the break-fix model.
Yep. Exactly. You pay per fix.
Yeah.
So an isolated printer jams, or maybe you need a single workstation set up for a new hire in a very simple, low-risk environment.
Right. And occasional help makes sense for those isolated, low-stakes events.
Yeah, it does. But the inherent flaw in building an entire business strategy around break-fix is that it is purely reactive. I mean, the clock on a solution doesn't even start ticking until after the damage is already occurring.
Which means the burden of monitoring everything basically falls on the business itself. It's like, think of it like managing a city's power grid.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Right. But instead of having a central command center monitoring voltage drops and, replacing transformers before they blow, you just wait until an entire city block goes completely dark.
Right. And then you call an electrician and just hope they have the right parts in their truck.
Exactly. And meanwhile, commerce on that entire block has just completely stopped.
That power grid analogy perfectly captures the systemic risk there. And the fallout from that reactive approach creates what we should probably call the invisible burden.
The invisible burden. Tell me more about that.
So in a break-fix model, someone internally has to serve as that makeshift command center. And it is usually the busy business owner, or maybe the operations lead, or an office manager.
Oh, yeah, the person who already has a full-time job.
Exactly. They are carrying this invisible weight of tracking software renewal dates, verifying that the on-site server backups are actually managing vendor contracts.
And trying to decipher whether a specific software patch is critical or optional, which is basically a second completely unpaid job as an IT manager.
Yeah, which distracts them from driving actual revenue.
But okay, let me play devil's advocate here for a second. If I am a small business owner, I'm looking at my P&L statement, right?
Sure.
A managed IT contract requires a recurring monthly fee, even if nothing is visibly broken that month. So on paper, isn't one-time support ultimately just cheaper?
Well, on paper, looking strictly at a single vendor invoice,
Yes.
the one-time fix invoice will absolutely look smaller.
Right, that's what a lot of people see.
But comparing those two invoices is a massive miscalculation of the true cost, because the real cost of the break-fix model is buried in all the collateral damage.
Like what are we missing when we just look at the invoice?
You have to calculate the wages paid to staff who are just sitting at their desks, completely unable to work because the server's down.
Oh, right.
And you have to factor in the leadership distraction you just mentioned. Then there is the intense pressure of an emergency response, where you might be paying, exorbitant rush fees to get a technician on site.
And most dangerously, you carry the existential risk of untested backups.
Exactly. If a drive fails and you find out the backup hasn't actually run properly in 3 months, the cost isn't just the IT guy's hourly rate to fix it. I mean, it is the permanent loss of your intellectual property.
Wow, yeah. Let's apply that to the real world because our source material specifically looks at businesses in Southern California.
Right.
So if you look at a growing professional services firm or a medical practice or maybe a construction office, the operational impact of downtime varies wildly between them, doesn't it?
Oh, completely wildly.
So how does leadership actually recognize when they have crossed that tipping point? When have they outgrown the occasional break-fix model?
Well, the tipping point usually manifests as recurring, unresolved patterns that directly impact revenue or compliance.
Like, give me an example.
Take the construction office, for example. If their field project managers are repeatedly unable to pull down heavy CAD files or blueprints on site because the VPN just keeps dropping.
That is a recurring bottleneck that's delaying actual project timelines.
Exactly. Or, for a medical practice, it might be the patient intake tablets losing network connection every Tuesday morning. That causes a backlog in the waiting room and, frankly, risks IPA compliance if data isn't syncing securely.
And because the break-fix technician is only paid to solve the immediate symptom, like getting the tablet back online that specific Tuesday, they aren't really incentivized to dig deeper.
No, and they might not even be authorized to analyze the network traffic logs to figure out why it keeps happening every single week.
They just put out the fire and leave.
Right, and the symptoms just keep returning. The text highlights a scenario where an organization loses access to its email network during a critical client day.
Oh, man, that's rough.
Yeah. The technical fix might only take a few hours, but the operational bleed is massive. Proposals don't go out. Client inquiries just sit unanswered. Trust is damaged.
So when a technology failure causes widespread internal panic and visibly stalls your revenue generation, the break-fix model has basically failed you.
Totally.
It also seems like this tipping point is fundamentally tied to modern network complexity. The text points out that managed IT becomes non-negotiable when you introduce hybrid work environments, right?
Or a heavy reliance on cloud tools, yeah. You aren't just protecting a single office router and a closet server anymore.
Right. The perimeter of your business is completely shattered. Every time a hybrid employee connects to your company data from a home Wi-Fi network.
A network that is also shared with their kids' gaming consoles and smart home devices, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. The attack surface just massively expands.
You are dealing with split tunnel VPNs, cloud application permissions, endpoint security on hardware you might not even own.
Yeah.
You simply cannot secure that sprawling architecture by waiting for a breach to happen and then calling for help.
Which brings us to the ultimate catalyst forcing businesses to mature their approach, and that is cybersecurity.
Oh, absolutely.
The sources incorporate guidance from CISA's Secure Our World initiative, which I like because it strips away a lot of the intimidation factor.
It really does. Yeah. It is not about defending against highly sophisticated zero-day exploits. It's about establishing basic, non-negotiable cyber hygiene.
Right, because CISA's guidance is rooted in the reality that most catastrophic breaches are the result of entirely preventable, ordinary weaknesses.
Yeah, attackers run automated scripts scanning the internet for unpatched firewalls or expose remote desktop protocols or accounts without multi-factor authentication.
They are looking for the unlocked side door. They're not trying to blow open the vault like in a movie.
Exactly. Let's drill down into multi-factor authentication, or MFA, for a second. Because it is one of CISA's primary recommendations, and it's a perfect example of why you need an operational rhythm.
Right. MFA isn't just a switch you flip once. It mechanically changes how access is granted.
Yeah. If an employee uses the same password for their company email that they used for a fitness app that got breached 3 years ago, the attacker has the password.
But MFA breaks that attack chain, right? Because the password alone is useless without the secondary time-based token on the employee's phone.
Precisely. And managing the deployment of MFA across dozens of cloud applications, making sure every new hire is properly enrolled in.
And handling the inevitable lockouts when someone loses their phone.
Oh, yeah, that happens all the time.
Yeah.
But that requires a daily managed process. And the same applies to patching. Installing security updates isn't just a one-time event.
Right, because software vendors release patches constantly to close newly discovered vulnerabilities.
Yeah, so a managed IT provider systematically tests and deploys those patches in the background, closing those unlocked doors before the automated scanning scripts even find them.
The structural difference becomes really clear during employee offboarding, too. Think about a reactive, unmanaged environment. An employee leaves, and maybe the office manager remembers to change their email password a week later.
A week later, yeah. And they might completely forget to revoke access to the third-party marketing software or the cloud storage drive.
Which is a massive lingering vulnerability.
Huge. But in a mature, managed environment, You utilize Identity and Access Management, or IAM. There is a documented automated offboarding sequence.
So the moment HR flags an employee as departed, a single protocol strips their access across the entire software ecosystem simultaneously.
Instantly and quietly. It neutralizes the risk and removes that invisible burden from your internal staff.
Okay, so we've established that the transition to a managed, secure rhythm is totally necessary. But how does a business actually integrate an outside provider if they already have an internal IT person or maybe a small tech department?
Yeah, that dynamic seems ripe for friction, doesn't it?
Very much so.
It is a highly sensitive transition. And this is where Technegian's background is particularly relevant. They were founded in November of 2000 by Robbie Jain, and they operate out of Irvine, supporting businesses throughout Southern California.
And while they offer full-scale management, right, like desktop and server support, VoIP phone systems, network architecture, their approach to co-managed IT specifically addresses this exact friction point.
Yeah. The framework is designed to extend the capabilities of an existing internal team rather than displacing them.
I like to think about it like a high-end restaurant kitchen.
Okay, I like where this is going.
So your internal IT person is the head chef. They know the menu. They know the company culture. They know exactly how the proprietary inventory software connects to the warehouse.
They possess that deep, bespoke knowledge of the business.
Exactly. But if the restaurant suddenly scales up and you bring in an outside catering crew to handle the volume, it will be absolute chaos if you don't define the roles.
Oh, absolutely. If the head chef and the outside caterers are both trying to chop the vegetables and cook the meat, they are just going to bump into each other, duplicate effort, and burn the food.
That role definition is the entire foundation of a successful co-managed relationship.
Yeah, and the documentation process has to happen before the contract is even signed. It usually involves integrating workflows at the software level.
Like connecting the internal team's help desk ticketing system with the managed service provider's tools through an API.
Exactly. You are literally hardwiring the handoff process.
So you map out exactly who owns what. The external provider, the caterers, might take on the grueling 247 heavy lifting.
Right. They handle the midnight firewall patching, the endpoint security monitoring, the automated backup verification.
While the internal team, the head chef, is freed from the daily grind of resetting passwords and monitoring logs.
And then they can pivot their focus to strategic projects, like migrating the company's proprietary ERP system to the cloud, or developing custom data dashboards for the executive team.
That makes a lot of sense. Establishing that clear division of labor ensures the internal staff feels empowered and supported by a robust backend, rather than feeling threatened by an outside vendor looking to take their jobs.
Exactly. It's about synergy.
Which brings us to the most critical, actionable phase of the deep dive. For the business leader listening right now who realizes they need to transition to either a fully managed or co-managed setup, how do they actually evaluate a provider?
Well, the source text lays out a very concrete buyer's checklist, but it doesn't start with asking vendors for quotes.
No. Where does it start?
It starts internally. You have to map your own environment first. You cannot protect or manage what you haven't quantified.
Meaning you have to conduct a thorough inventory.
Yes. That means documenting the exact number of employees, the distribution of remote versus on-premise devices, your physical servers, and every single cloud platform housing company data.
You need to catalog your critical line of business applications and your communication infrastructure, like your VoIP phone system.
Right.
Now, I can hear the collective sigh of operations directors right now.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Gathering that level of granular inventory sounds incredibly tedious. Why can't a business just hire an IT provider like Technegian, grant them admin access, and say, hey, you run the network audit, you tell us what we need?
Well, a qualified provider will absolutely run a technical audit. They will deploy discovery tools to map your network topology and identify outdated operating systems, things like that. But technical data alone doesn't dictate business strategy. Only the leadership team understands the operational impact of that technology.
Oh, I see. Meaning the provider can tell you what is broken, but only you know how much it hurts.
Exactly. The IT vendor can identify that a specific server is running an unsupported operating system. But the CEO knows that if that specific server goes down, the logistics team can't route delivery trucks.
And then the company bleeds $10,000 an hour in delayed shipments and SLA penalties.
Right. The business leader has to translate the technical infrastructure into business risk. You have to categorize which systems are mission critical for revenue and which are peripheral.
And once that baseline is established, the evaluation shifts to communication and alignment, right? You are essentially interviewing a business partner, not just buying a software license.
Yeah, the checklist emphasizes defining your reporting expectations. If you are a highly regulated medical practice, you can't just settle for an automated email saying a ticket was closed.
No, you need an SLA, a service level agreement that guarantees response times.
You might require quarterly strategic reviews to analyze security trends and verify HIPAA compliance audits. The depth of communication really must match the complexity of the business.
You also have to force the potential provider to explain their risk mitigation strategies in plain language.
Yes, plain language is key. You bring your mapped inventory and your specific fears to the table. You say, look, we are terrified of a ransomware attack locking down our shared project drives. Walk us through your exact escalation path if that happens.
And if their answer is a wall of technical jargon about heuristic analysis and immutable storage arrays that you don't even understand on a calm Tuesday afternoon in a conference room,
then they're going to be completely unintelligible during an actual crisis on a Friday night when your systems are locked.
Absolutely. Clarity is a proxy for competence here.
Yeah. A mature provider will give you a clear operational answer. They'll say, if an endpoint detects suspicious encryption activity, our system automatically isolates that device from the network. Our security operations center receives an immediate alert, investigates the vector, and if necessary, we roll back your server to the verified hourly snapshot we took prior to the event.
And they should tell you exactly who from their team will call your designated incident commander and what the timeline is.
Exactly. That level of clarity takes the invisible burden we talked about earlier and completely dissolves it into a documented process.
So to pull all these threads together, we have examined the critical shift from relying on reactive break-fix support to establishing a proactive operational rhythm.
Well, we looked at how to calculate the true operational cost of downtime, accounting for lost productivity, leadership distraction, and all the complexities of hybrid work.
We also explored how fundamental cyber hygiene, driven by CISA's guidelines, requires consistent daily management patching, access control, MFA, that just cannot be achieved through occasional intervention.
And for businesses with existing staff, we discussed how a co-managed model, utilizing strict role documentation and workflow integration, provides heavy lifting support without displacing internal talent.
Ultimately, evaluating an IT provider using this buyer's checklist is not a technology purchasing decision. It is a fundamental business planning exercise.
It really is. It is about choosing an operational partner capable of reducing friction and protecting the mechanisms that generate your revenue.
The goal is to align your technology support model with the actual operational reality of your business, ensuring that your infrastructure accelerates your growth rather than acting as a constant liability.
Well said.
We will leave you with this final thought to consider regarding your own environment. We talked a lot today about the known perimeter, your servers, your VPNs, your managed applications, but consider the rapid adoption of generative AI tools over the last 12 months. If your employees are independently using unauthorized third-party AI browser extensions to draft emails or summarize client documents, they are potentially feeding highly sensitive proprietary data into public models.
Yeah, that creates a massive shadow IT environment.
Exactly. So in your current support model, who is actively monitoring for unauthorized applications and who is responsible for securing the data your team is voluntarily giving away?
It is a massive blind spot for organizations operating without a proactive strategy. The perimeter is constantly shifting, and without a managed approach, those new vulnerabilities go completely unchecked.
Absolutely. If you are ready to evaluate your current setup and move beyond the reactive cycle, we highly recommend reading the Complete Buyer's Checklist article authored by Ravi Jain.
It's a great read.
You can reach out to Technigian directly to discuss your specific infrastructure, map out your operational bottlenecks, and begin building a practical, resilient IT roadmap. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.